You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
So what I would just say is that I believe in making the artist part of it. Yeah. Part of the family, so to speak, if you're going to grow together. Now, sometimes we do artist development deals with small-time artists, and sometimes you go get a huge established artist that just kind of has an instant fan base. That's why the deals are always different. You tailor... There's a template, but I don't just, here's the template, go. I tailor it to each person accordingly. So I'll tweak this, tweak that, tweak this, tweak that. So I have to kind of tailor it to the artist. But I ultimately want them to be part of it long term. That's kind of the idea, because it's a branding thing more than anything. And if the band or the artist becomes synonymous with the brand of the equipment and vice versa, then it kind of becomes a synergy thing where it just exponentially grows over time. And I think that's the way to go.
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hops heads? I'm Matt, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, brought to you by Sound Talent Media and Evergreen Podcasts, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians, talk all about their lives and music while sharing killer craft beers. This Vox and Hops episode is presented by Heavy Montreal. Heavy Montreal are Montreal's premier metal promoter. And trust me when I say, if you are ever in Montreal and you are looking for a show to go to, well, Heavy Montreal will have you covered. They put on so many shows all year long, and they are all simply bangers. I am beyond stoked to have Heavy Montreal behind the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. Now, before we jump into today's episode, I'd just like to ask you to follow the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast on the podcast platform of your choice. But more than that, I would love for you to tell a friend about the podcast. If there's someone in your life that just loves extreme metal, well, let them know that the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast exists. You can tell them that there are over 400 episodes where I sit down with some of the world's best metal musicians. We talk all about their lives and music while sharing killer craft beers. If you're to encourage one of your metalhead friends to become a brand new Vox and Hops head, that would be something that I would truly appreciate.
Now today on the podcast, I'm very stoked to be with Mike Marino of Audio Technica. Get ready, everyone. This is Vox and Hops episode number 431.
I warn you, what you are about to hear is very disturbing indeed.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Today I'm very stoked to be back with my very, very good friend, my longtime friend, Mike Marino. We have talked before. You were on an Origin Story, Matt, episode years ago. I've been meaning to have you on the podcast multiple times since then, but it just never came around. Now we have an absolute reason to have a conversation because you are working for Audio Technica and you hooked up both Cryptopsy and Vox and Hops with an endorsement deal with Audio Technica, and I'm very stoked about that. Mike, how you doing?
Doing good. Happy to be here, man. Finally.
Hell yes. Finally. After 400 episodes, you don't get...
All it took was free gear.
Surprise, surprise. You've discovered my secrets.
Yes.
We are recording this very close to my house at the microbrewery that's actually closest to my house. We are at Melon, right near Jean Talon Street. We are drinking their light Czech lager. It's called Tout Léger, which is very light, very light. 3.7%. Cheers.
Cheers, man.
Back history first for people that don't know who we are. We've known each other for over 20 years. You are basically the reason that I play in Cryptopsy. I truly believe that had you not called me after I fell out of Nyxtasm,
yeah.
Exactly. That hypothetically, I would have never gotten back into a real band. So you found me, called me, got me into 3 Mile Scream. We did a bunch of stuff with 3 Mile Scream together. Now you are working in gear. You're working in Audio Technica. Talk to me about how you fell into the world of working with gear.
Wow. All right. Well, I mean, basically, as you'll recall, in the band, I always managed stuff and everything
right?
And did all that stuff. So kind of took that experience and all those years of that. Plus, I was always a gear freak, talking gear and getting excited about equipment and this and that. So I just kind of married the two aspects, and here I am. And I did it for Ibanez before, as you know. And then, of course, you know, still playing and with other bands and toured with other bands and stuff. So it's kind of just all that. But I do remember saying one way or another, I'll always be in this business. And from that day, it never changed.
So
that is the truth.
You used to work in like music stores, and then you've just being such a smart individual and good with people. You just basically kept meeting people and getting better and better jobs and climbing up out of rental departments and music stores to becoming a rep for Ibanez and now Audio Technica.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, wow. That's kind of like a summary, I guess. I mean, I just kind of clawed my way through it, basically, is what I did. But, you know, at the same time, you know, it's like, it's because I'm still a musician, right? I mean, a lot of guys just throw in the towel, give up after
exactly,
a while.
Exactly.
Even guys that are very well established do that.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's not in me. It's not in my genes. It's not in me. It's not in my bloodline. It's not who I am. So I kind of have no choice. Yeah.
You do still play. You play bass.
Yeah.
You were the bassist of 3 Mile Scream. You still play bass. Talk to me about some of the other projects you got going on.
Currently? I'm doing the Born Broken. So that's, you know, still playing the heavy, angry shit. Actually just recorded with your guitar player as, you know, it's been quite a long procedure, but it's coming along. It sounds really good, and I'm excited for the album to finally come out. And then as well as that, I play in a cover band called Retrograde, and I'm also playing in a kind of a classic blues rock project with some older dudes with my buddy Mimo, and they're called Mimo's After Show. And so there's that too. So those are the three things I got going right now. And then,
busy boy, as well
as the work. And then, of course, after 3 Mile Scream, I was in the Catalyst, too. I should mention that. And I toured with them for many years. So.
Correct. And I did some vocals for them for a while,
yes,
too.
Yes, you did.
Talk to me about back to Born Broken. I've heard some of the material. It's fucking good. Chris showed me some tracks. It's got some Machine Head vibes. It's got some Slipknot-y vibes. Bringing back the aggressive American wave of metal.
Kinda. It's kind of like that Chimera era. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Chimera, Slipknot, Machine Head. A little bit of Soulfly in there sometimes at moments. Sepultura, kind of that. All that stuff that we kind of, you know, a bit of maybe some Fear Factory elements too, but it's all just kind of that kind of Bay Area thrash kind of thing, which is my stuff pretty much. So, you know, I've just kind of, and Mike, you know, Mike does, he's a great riff writer and this and that, and he's definitely, you know, I think he's finally getting to do stuff that where he can let loose more. I think that in the past he was trying to maybe follow certain trends or certain, like, you know what I mean? But I think,
which is always a dangerous thing to do. You have to.
Yeah, but it was great. But I feel like he's just let loose on this one, and that's why it seems like way more granular.
He's also come back to vocals. I've known Mike for a long time. Mike Decker, of course, we're talking about. He used to be in Dilute the Poison. I remember seeing him perform in a church because that's where you could play at that point in time. And he was doing vocals there. He's back on vocals now. We won't get into the whole story, but he's killing it on vocals.
Sounds great. He really brought his A game, man. And like, there was a bit of a situation in the studio, and Mike stepped up like instantly and killed it and actually made it 10 times better.
Yeah, and and Born Broken being such his identity, I see it as, it's cool that he's showcasing it now.
Yeah. Well, I think he's kind of just let loose now, you know, which is good.
Unchained.
He should, yeah, exactly. So it's good. It's good. And Carlos is a fantastic drummer. Super easy to work with. Me and him we're very on the same wavelength. Like, we come from the same place, so me and him lock in like super easy. I really like the guy. He's super cool.
Back to gear. Cryptopsy, we're very excited. Something that we've been working towards for a very long time. A goal, especially coming from Christian Donaldson, him working in audio. He absolutely wanted in-ear monitors. It's something that he's strived for. He wanted to build a whole show. He's that type of guitarist that you love being in a band with, because as soon as you step off stage, he'll list out the 1, 2, 3, 4 mistakes you made that night. Always appreciated. We definitely don't annoy. It's not annoying at all.
No, of course not.
He's one of those guys that hears everything. So it's something that he strived to have. And with your help with Audio Technica, now we're there. We practiced last night. We were getting ready for Carnival Death Tour. Very excited to finally have leveled up the band. Talk to me about these products and how, you know, like what Audio Technica, what do they do better than other companies?
I mean, the whole thing with Audio Technica is that they take, it's a very analog approach in a lot of ways. Like, yeah, we have digital and we're not like in the Stone Age per se, but it's kind of an analog thing. That's kind of the approach. So it tries to maintain a certain level of like organic integrity, whereas some of these other ones can come across a little cold, no character, kind of very generic sounding. So this is a kind of, it's attenuated to have its own sound, which is cool. Outside of that, I mean, there's a lot of cool features to go that go with that. Like, there's certain softwares that where you can go in and kind of analyze the room that you're in, and it finds the best frequencies.
Very cool.
Of the room, it's kind of like a spectrum analyzer.
Nice. So we got like the best, freshest, undisturbed signals in any room, no matter what.
Yeah, you got to go room by room for that. You
exactly.
know, when you get there, and it kind of just scans the room and picks out optimal frequencies.
Amazing.
Yeah. So, and plus, you know, that's also helpful in the fact that when as these frequencies get outlawed over the years, you want to definitely grab the ones that are
Hell
available.
Yes.
So this is also a very big, because as long as you update it, it stays updated. And then, you know what I mean? So it won't give you a frequency where all of a sudden you're getting arrested on stage like certain bands did on tours.
Is that true?
There are some stories out
Because yeah. they're using like...
military frequencies. Yeah. That's
wow.
like that's like a federal offense.
Holy shit. And the band is like, I just did an update, my thing.
Yeah, well, I didn't know.
God
so
damn.
A lot of those older systems, people actually had to come and like trade them in to get newer ones because of the certain frequency ranges only in certain units.
Amazing.
So, yeah.
I'm also very stoked I'm using it right now because we're out of this podcast studio. I'm not in my kitchen table, basically, where I typically do Zoom. We're doing this live at Mellon. So I'm holding this brand new mic that I just received, and I'm very stoked. First interview with you with it, which seems fitting. Talk to me about this mic. First reaction I had with it last night when I jammed was it's extremely lightweight.
How does that make you feel?
I feel strong.
Makes you feel like a man?
Finally.
Finally. It's good. Now that peach fuzz is going to grow in a little bit.
Maybe.
Yeah,
maybe.
Like I see a couple of strands.
Talk to me about this mic. What's going on with this mic, Edwin? Compared to, I always use a Sennheiser. I've used Shure in the past.
Well, this is the Artist Elite series, right? It's 41. It's meant to be rugged. It's meant to go out on the road. It's meant to take a beating. It's a workhorse.
I like that.
It's a workhorse.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The capsule has got like a really wide range of frequencies it picks up. It's a dynamic microphone, so it's not, you know, it's not a condenser, so it's not going to pick up some guy farting in the next room, which is a
good
thing.
That was important for the podcast because I knew that when I go out and do things like this, I don't want that. As we started recording for you, like, Matt, there's a baby crying over there.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was like, from experience, I know it's not going to be a problem with mics like these.
Right. And then the other mic I gave you, which is like for the kind of sit down podcast situation,
correct.
That's the AT2040. That's a dynamic mic too.
Yeah.
That's kind of like, let's say a lower, it's like an equivalent of the SM7B of Shure, which is like the mic.
The mic, yeah.
That's the one like Joe Rogan uses and all these guys ever use. Yeah. It's a dynamic mic. It's specialized for like podcasting and stuff like that.
Very stoked to start recording episodes with that. Leveling up. You've really helped the band level up, and that's something that I truly appreciate. Talk to me about doing endorsement deals, about the company's mindset, about not like why Cryptopsy, but why do companies such as Audio Technica do endorsement deals with bands?
Well, I mean, there's different reasons for different companies, right? They all have different strategies. Some of them are really into this kind of influencer marketing. Me personally, not really so into that. I mean, I see its value, but it's also very transactional.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, it feels like I'm going to go and I'm going to give you XYZ, whether it's money or equipment. You're going to say this is the best. And then next week you're saying it about my competitor.
Correct.
So I'm not really into that. To me, that's like, I won't say it on the podcast, but it brings a very inappropriate situation to mind. So what I would just say is that I believe in making the artist part of it.
Yeah.
Part of the family, so to speak. If you're going to grow together. Now, sometimes we do artist development deals with small-time artists. And sometimes you go get a huge established artist that just kind of has an instant fan base. That's why the deals are always different. You tailor, there's a template, but I don't just, here's the template, go. I tailor it to each person accordingly. So I'll tweak this, tweak that, tweak this, tweak that. You know what I mean? I mean, I can't give Brian Adams the same deal that I give the guy that plays Joe's Grill. You know what I mean?
Correct.
So I have to kind of tailor it to the artist. But I ultimately want them to be part of it long term. That's kind of the idea, because it's a branding thing more than anything. And if the band or the artist becomes synonymous with the brand of the equipment and vice versa, then it kind of becomes a synergy thing where it just exponentially grows over time. And I think that's the way to go.
Well, we're very stoked. We're very proud to be associated with Audio Technica. It's just the beginning. We're excited to continue this journey. I appreciate you going above and beyond to help us out, setting up everything, getting it all sorted. I've known you forever, and it was a very nice, easy relationship because I've known you forever. How does it work typically with people that you're not directly associated with? How do you come into contact with artists and set up other deals, endorsement deals?
Look, it depends again on the, like when I was working for Ibanez, it was guitar players and bass players. That's kind of where it stopped.
It's
guitars
box.
And basses, right?
It.
So yeah, with this type of gear, it's a way bigger, versatile situation.
Yeah, because Audio Technica is also very, very well known for headphones, turntables, and other things like that.
Studio mics, wireless mics, all that stuff. So DJs are a part of it.
Exactly.
A lot of singers, a lot of vocalists of all different genres. In musicians, because, you know, they mic up, whether it's drum mics, guitar mics, whatever.
The whole studio mics. Thing. Yeah.
Producers, yeah. It's a big thing. We actually sponsor the Producer of the Year award at the Junos.
That's
so we're
sick.
Like the pro audio sponsor of the Junos. So for that, like, so we kind of deal with all, like, it's way more versatile this way. So in terms of how I approach it, it's a little different. With Ibanez, it was a little more rock and roll, and it was a little bit more like, okay, that's a cool guitar player, and it's cool a bass player. But it was always kind of, you know, rock, metal, blues, country. It was pretty much, that was it.
Is that because, like, Ibanez is... The brand has decided to affiliate themselves with those genres?
Yeah. I mean, every guitar is like a... you're not going to see too many metal guys playing a Taylor acoustic. You know what I mean? Like, You know, just like you're not going to see too many blues guys play like an Ibanez RG. Yeah. It's just the way it is. They've come synonymous with the metal thing, but they also do a good amount of country stuff. A little bit of hollow bodies with the jazzes and this and that, but... this stuff applies to everybody.
Yeah, exactly. So it's much more liberating and free and who you can work with.
So, like, we literally have you guys, and then, like, I have, like, an R&B singer, and then I have two DJs, and then I have, like, podcasters, and I have this... It applies to so many things. We even work with sports guys and athletes, and especially, like, with the earbuds and this and that. It's, like, a whole kind of lifestyle thing, you know what I mean? Yeah. So there's all kinds of different things. Make no mistake, when you see these athletes walking around with their Beats by Dre, they're not doing it for free.
Yeah, I get it.
You know, as much as they may like them.
Yeah.
You understand? So there's a lot of different types of relationships out there you have to build. And it's a little bit more versatile with this one. You have to be a little bit more open-minded. I've been to concerts and situations that I never thought I'd go to in this job. Because I still insist on seeing them perform live, because I'm old school in that regard.
You want the relationship, you want the experience.
Yeah, but because I don't want to give it to somebody that does studio magic, and then when they're live, it sounds like terrible. Like,
correct.
Because that just makes us look bad, too. Serious, I do still insist on that. Like, when it comes to a musician or someone who performs, I want to see them play before I give my stamp of approval, because there's a whole hierarchy in our company, and even though I'm the manager of this for Canada, I do have superiors, and at the end of the year, when we'll do reviews and such, that's like, well, why did we endorse this person? What did they bring to the table, and what happened over the year?
Excellent, excellent bounce-off question. What do companies expect from artists that are endorsed?
Companies expect social posts and tags and... this is the coolest stuff in the universe, and I love it, and yeah.
You should, because basically we want to encourage other people to pick it up to perform as well as us.
I look at it a little bit differently in that there is that, but it's more, I want it to be legitimate. If somebody's doing it just because they want an endorsement deal, I'm not interested. I don't care if you're the biggest band in the world. It's not here to just stroke your ego. I'm here to build a brand, right?
Yes.
So if I'm there, like, trying to, like, satisfy someone, oh, well, they'll give me free gear, so I'll just go with them. Yeah, until the next guy offers you free gear and you'll jump ship.
Right? Which is something that I've seen happen.
Yeah, and I'm not into that, man. Like, I'm not into that. Like, I want people that are already passionate about the stuff, that already know it and are always, like, into it. So then I'm like, okay, these people are in it, because even without us, they're into it anyway.
Exactly.
So they're only going to be more encouraged if we support it, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So it really, really just comes down to that, man. It's I want somebody who's legit and who has, like, obviously has a reach and who is down to promote the stuff. But I also don't believe in micromanaging that. Like, I'm not going to go, did you do your post this week? Like, you know, like, it's weird.
You could, but you can also text me about other things, too.
Yeah, yeah. But it's just like, yeah, I don't know, man. Like, to me, it's I feel like some weird teacher or something, like, in school. Like, did you do your homework?
Can,
like,
I do my follow-up on
this
guy?
Get out of here. Just, like, to me, if I have to chase you to do that, there's a problem.
Yeah.
Because you should be doing that of your own volition.
Because you're proud and happy with the gear.
Yeah, right? So it's kind of like that. Like, I don't, if I find myself doing that, that pisses me off. Like, it's not something I want to do. So keep that in mind.
It's noted and recorded, so I will be reminded as I edit this as well. Talk to me about before you used to be with Ibanez. You would go and follow artists and be on the road with them. Now you just come back from Toronto. You were at a trade show. Correct me if that's the wrong term. What's the biggest difference with your position now versus following guitarists around doing clinics?
It's not all sweaty metal dudes anymore. That's kind of fun. except now.
I am a bit sweaty, but
no. But it's different, man. It's a different vibe. I mean, I still do go and do events with the artists, but there's also other things that maybe we didn't do with Ibanez where guitars wouldn't really apply.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? But so it's a bit different, like I said, but it's also, in a sense, it's a new thing that I have to learn at the same time. So I'd rather have a well-rounded view of everything.
Yeah.
Even if I went back to a guitar company next year, I would approach it differently than I did the first time around.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So it's kind of like the more you're kind of an accumulation of your experiences, I think.
Well, you've definitely had a lot of them, and you've had a lot of them with me.
Drunken ones.
Let's give some people some goods here. Let's go back into the past. We toured together a lot. Played my first big show with you, notably when we opened for Soulfly at the Spectrum, which is a classic venue that is no longer around here in Montreal.
You remember arguing with Gloria?
I do not. So I want, people have been listening this long. Let's open up and then make this less like PC.
PC. I don't do PC.
I know, that's why. What happened? We could get into some stories is basically where I'm going.
Yeah, okay. Well, if you want to talk about that one.
I don't know. I remember that we were being too loud.
It was the price matching on the merch.
No, I don't remember that. Okay, go for it.
So she came to the merch table and chewed us out because we were selling our t-shirts for less. But we were like the local support band
a
at the time.
Very young local support band.
It was like our first big gig.
Totally.
And like, really? Like, you're worried about this?
As if we're going to like sell more shirts because our shirts were less than the headliner.
Yeah, because the people were paying $40 to come see us, right?
Exactly.
Yes. $40, which back then was a lot.
It's true.
Now it's like how much you spend for a beer.
$65, hypothetically. Yeah.
It's crazy. So that's what happened that night. I remember having a big argument with her at the merch table. And then I also remember her kicking us out of backstage after our set.
I do remember that there was a reason for that.
Yeah.
Though,
and
that
we don't need another not dime bag situation.
Correct.
Come on.
Correct. So they had set up like protocols.
Because it was right after. It
was
like
very
a year or
close
two after.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bit silly, but whatever.
I do remember when Dimebag situation happened, you called me.
Probably.
And you were like, did you hear what happened? I do remember that.
I would believe that I would have done that, yes.
Yeah, because we were in 3 Mile at the time.
Yeah, well, that was a very sad day.
It was.
Yeah, there's actually a bit of a weird story with the Dimebag thing. I don't know if I want to get into it on there.
You don't
have
to, but yeah. I have played, and I know that story.
Yeah.
And that's not what I was picking at. I have played that club, and I know you've been in that club as well.
Yes.
You before and me afterwards. Eerie being in that club.
Very eerie.
Yeah.
And it was just very, the whole situation kind of rubbed me the wrong way when it happened, on more than just because of what happened at Dimebag, just because of certain personal things in that club and things there. It was just weird.
I started drinking a lot of beer with you because, and we might have talked about it last time, but I don't quite remember. I feel like it was just a very short snippet that I had you last time on the podcast. So we have a little bit more time now to dig into some of our antics as we used to do so. So
you sure you want to do this?
A little bit. I can edit it.
Cops might show up at our house, arrest us.
We used to go to Foof's, which is where Carnival of Death is happening, or will have had happened by the time this episode comes out, the Montreal date of that. So it was a beautiful scene that we had, and I talked about it with our Adam Ryder when I had him on the podcast. About what was happening in the mid-2000s, the metal scene that was happening in Montreal, and how we would basically meet up at Foof's. What are your memories of that scene, and why Foof's, and everything that was going on there?
My memories usually stop at 11 p.m. on those nights.
Well, you're very good at drinking lots of shots.
I was. I can still do it, but now it sucks way more the day after.
Brutally.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, I mean, look, there actually was a scene back then. That's just the truth. There was actually two scenes, really. Call it fortunate or unfortunate, but there was an Anglophone scene and a Francophone scene,
which is sort of silly. I think of it so silly because Cryptopsy is so bilingual now. I find it so silly.
Yeah, it's. But I'm just.
I think
that's
changed over time.
Yeah, I'm saying back then, right? I don't even know if there is a scene anymore, but that's another discussion.
That was my next question.
But right now, I'm just going to say that back then, like, yeah, there was definitely a community thing. Like, being in a band was an important thing. Being in a serious band to try to aspire to something was an important thing. It wasn't just a bunch of guys in their garage going, oh, let's play a band.
And just for partying. They really, really, really wanted to in so many bands.
Some got successful, varying degrees. Some didn't. Whatever. But there was something pretty cool happening at the time. And there was not just the bands. There was a community of friends around them.
That was supporting the whole scene.
Girlfriends and just the entourage and all the people. And it was just, there was a cool vibe happening at the time. And I don't think we were able to properly appreciate it at the time.
No, we were so immersed. Whenever you're like too immersed in something, you don't appreciate what's going on.
Yeah. So then you look back and you're like, wow, that was pretty fucking cool.
There was crazy cool shows.
There was. There was some crazy not cool shows too, but there was some crazy cool shows.
Mike and Livio, we won't talk about that show that you put on.
No.
In St. Leonard.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Oh, what was it called, the venue?
The Ritz.
Was it called the Ritz?
Okay. I think it was called the Ritz.
And there was literally no one there.
Well, there was the guy climbing in the rafters there. Remember, wasn't his name Spider or something?
I know he wanted us to play Whiplash for some reason.
Oh, yeah. That would have been good. I would have loved to see Norm do that one.
But there's a handful of really good shows.
No, there was. There was some really
cool.
Big
Metal Fest 2 at Lex.
Remember that one? Yeah.
That
Big Metal Fest 3 at Medley. I remember that one.
That was a bit more of a miss.
Well, there was some weird. We had a weird band member at that time.
He was fun, but he's a weird band member, yes.
Yeah. We had a few weird, but it was definitely, there were a lot. Well, all the opening slots, right, that we got
Correct.
For the bigger bands.
Yeah,
like
shout out to Dave.
These guys.
Shout out to Dave. He's wearing an Unearthed shirt. And, Dave Boucher's been on the podcast, Extensive Enterprise. Massive shout out for him.
Yeah, Ivanko gave us gigs. They did, and then, of course, playing for Noel Peters in Toronto.
Opening for Cryptopsy, actually, a few times.
Yeah.
In Toronto, thanks to Noel. Yeah.
You're still living off that vibe, aren't you?
I guess so, yeah. There was one of those nights that I was like, I guess I should say yes.
Yeah. And then, there was also just other gigs we did out there, too, I remember. And just all these road gigs. Hey, the Milwaukee Metal Fest.
We met David Ellefson.
We did. We also met a few other interesting people along the way.
It was a very interesting. It was a long drive.
Oh, yes. I still tell that story to this day. You have no idea.
It was a very long drive.
It was a very long drive with a few interesting pit stops.
There was nobody there at the show, though.
Well, there was some, but they put us on right after Macabre, if you'll remember.
That is true.
That
is true. That
was kind of bizarre. They just brought the Milwaukee Metal Fest back this year. Jamie Jasta brought it back.
He did a good job, too.
He did, because it wasn't, you know. Yeah.
That was different times.
Different times. But we did it. It's there. What else did we, yeah, there was a whole bunch of gigs, man. I don't remember them all. If I could, you know what I mean? Then I did like a slew of others with Catalyst, and you did a slew of others with Cryptopsy.
I remember opening with Devin Townsend with the Catalyst with you.
Yeah.
And the only opportunity I had to have a conversation with him was in the bathroom. And because we were both in the bathroom, I was like, I'm not talking to him. And I didn't.
You didn't do like the next, like talking in the stall?
No, because I hate when people do that to me. So
he could have like stared over
I totally
and compared. Could have. And,
it's probably, he probably has the same face up and down. But Tesseract played that show, and I remember they were goddamn good that night.
They were very good.
I was like, oh my god, who is this band?
Yeah, I didn't know who they were either. I still listen to them.
Me too. They're coming. They're coming soon. And
yeah. I mean, there was a slew of gigs. I mean, I did. I actually did a lot of big gigs with Catalyst. I have to say, and you know, like the heavy MTL, heavy Toronto.
Yeah.
Did the I did the Apocalyptica. I did all these different things. Like there was
you did
a lot.
Hell
of,
yeah.
Hell too. Yeah. I did Hell Yeah with Vinnie Paul.
Yeah. Yeah. You also had to leave right after that show too.
Oh yeah. And then we toured with Rex.
Yes, we did.
And Vinny Appice.
That is true.
With Kill Devil Hill, and you were on that tour.
He's got a knife.
He does have a knife. He knows how to use it. You know, I saw him the other day.
Yes. Because he went to go see Pantera in Toronto.
And here. So I was with Zach, and then, like, so Rex was there, and I couldn't get it out of my head. I used to, like, he's got a knife.
He knows how to use it.
But it was funny. But he is, hey, he's Rex, man. He's fucking Rex. What do you want to say?
Hell fucking Rex. Yes. Back to those Foofs nights. We would basically go to Foofs on Friday nights, and we would consume copious amounts of alcohol. But then my favorite part always was, with you guys, was going to eat afterwards.
Ah.
And food as like a communal wrap obsession was, first off, a great hangover cure, because you're going to put a bunch of like fatty, greasy food into you before going to bed. But there was always this like communal, like after sit down together. I think that was something that I really appreciated.
It was cool, man. It was kind of like the wrap up of the night.
It was amazing.
However, I wonder whose idea it was to keep going for Asian food, because we did that often.
Was it me? I like Asian food.
Olivio too, I think.
Yeah, I like Asian food.
But we always
food.
Ended up in New Dynasty, right? So
because it started the food always when we started 3 Mile Scream, I would always want to go to McDonald's.
Oh yeah, well that's where we got introduced to a few people.
Correct.
The very first time.
And, correct. Yeah.
Just getting back to the thing for a second, because you talked about like those nights of drinking and then going to go eat, and I'm like saying with the Asian thing, like I distinctly remember, well, kind of remember, going to that restaurant after copious alcohol, and then puking like rice all over a parking meter. So,
well, had you not puked, it would have stayed in you, and the alcohol would have fermented even more.
Yeah, but the rice soaks it up like,
exactly.
Like the water out of like a cell phone. You know what I mean?
So just like, out of you.
Yeah. Just get out of here. Yeah. So anyway, but yeah, the McDonald's thing, that's where we first met, guy I played with for many years, guy and other guys that we became very good friends with for a very long time.
Who also had on a Mad Origin Story.
Yes.
Episode, Big Metal James. Shout out to you. Shout out to G, too.
G. Al.
True, Al Bubrahakis. Heartbeat Hot Sauce. People, go check out heartbeathotsauce.com. Use the promo code VOXHOPS. 15, you'll save 15% off of your entire purchase. Do it, support the podcast, and get some crazy good hot sauce from our friend Al, who's killing it.
I was actually on his website today.
He's killing it. Use the promo code.
Yeah, I know.
I get a kickback and he gets some hot sauce.
There you go.
You'll do it.
His inflame sauce looks pretty cool.
It's good. It's spicy.
Yeah, yeah.
It's it does look pretty cool. Hot compared to some of the other ones he's got. Yeah. I'm just about finished the bottle. I'm very close to writing Al for a new package. No. So many people from the scene have gone on to do amazing things. Why do you think now, as you mentioned before, is there a scene? Are we just so out of it that we don't know if there's a scene?
Maybe there is, but like I could tell you that, you know, certain like friends of ours that are still involved in terms of promoting and
correct.
Shows and stuff, they come and they tell me, oh, this show's coming. And I'm like, who's opening or whatever? And I'm like, I hear these names. I'm like, huh? Like, and maybe they're great. I don't know. They could be fantastic bands. But I'm just like, either I'm old and out of the loop, or there's just no buzz. I don't know what it is. So I'm not going to claim it's one or the other. But it just, like, I feel like it used to be more known. Like, the bands that would play would be like, oh, yeah, they're playing. Oh, yeah, they're playing. It was kind of like a
I don't know if it's because we were just so into it and we had the community that was there. And we were definitely aware of the English-French two scenes. Like, that's where Chris, I remember the first time I first heard of Chris before as a producer, there was this band, Mythosis Minds. And one of the first Mythosis shows had kids lined up and you were like, this is a band we got to pay attention to.
Yeah, I think I said that. That sounds right. I remember that back in the day. I also remember sending the Agonists to Chris for their first album.
Correct.
So, yeah, that was a long time ago.
Which led them to get signed because when Chris records a band, he likes to show people his mixes, and he showed it off to Life from Century Media back in the day, and boom.
There you go.
A record contract. Oh, one of my favorite memories is playing a pea field.
Bean field.
Bean field.
Bean, not pea, bean. Get it right.
One of my favorite memories was playing a bean field in Leamington, Ontario.
Oh, yeah.
I've recently reconnected with Jessica.
Oh, really?
From Bloodshot Eye on social media. And what an interesting experience having stages set up. I can't remember what it was called. The festival.
There
was
I don't remember either.
It was something Metal Fest.
I don't remember. I just remember debauchery and the next morning just chaos. Like
we found a breakfast joint though, which was awesome.
Yeah, wasn't that the place? No, that was another place. Sorry, I thought it was a place where Alex got up on the table and it was a teacup. That was Hooters. Yeah.
A lot of my first experiences touring, doing anything outside of Montreal, was with you. This is a funny one. Do you remember the van that we had? And we were going on tour with Kanai and Bloodshot Eye, who I was just talking about. And we had a van, but I brought so much stuff.
You had all this stuff, like Ziploc bags. And
I had a grilled cheese maker, but that was a good idea.
The grilled cheese maker. To this day, I tell the stories about that wedding hall.
Which is also in Leamington, I want to say.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, why does it smell like grilled cheese?
It was me.
It was you. Like in the hallway.
Cup of soups and grilled cheese. Yeah, I basically still do that, but with like a blender making my smoothies in the morning.
We played there with 14 bands.
One of them was Dismata, which I'm still friends with.
Those guys are beasts.
This day. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And there was definitely there were these old ladies working the wedding hall, but like serving the drinks because, and they were just like, "What's going on?" And there were mosh pits on the carpets.
It was a good show.
It was a good show, except we got there at 2 p.m. and we played at midnight.
That sounds about right. Yeah. That adds up.
So I was pretty drunk by the time I got on stage.
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hopsheads? I just want to take a little moment about Cryptopsy's upcoming tours. That's right, I'm talking about the Scream of Perseverance tour and our headliner dates that coincide with that tour called As Summer Burns. The Scream of Perseverance tour is kicking off at the end of May and runs all the way until the end of June. We are supporting the mighty Death to All. We are going all over the United States and we are hitting some of Canada. So excited to be honoring the legendary music of Death alongside amazing musicians that performed on these albums. Even more stoked to be doing some headliner dates in some cities that I've actually never played in. If you are planning to come to any of these shows, you should definitely grab your tickets by going to voxandhops.com/summer and you will be able to grab all of your tickets there. That's voxandhops.com/summer. Do it, people. Come hang out with me. Enjoy life, metal, and craft beer in your hometown. Come to a show. We're going to have a great time. Now, enough about all of that. Let's get back to the episode.
Something that happened that I used to always say, I guess I'm like an eternal doubter, and I'm not sure we mentioned this last time, but it might have fell into that thematic of that, and I apologize if listeners have listened to both. It's when Randy came to hang out with us, because he was producing Bloodshot Eye's vocals, and he came to our jam room. And I was always like an eternal doubter of like, is 3 Mile Scream gonna make it? Like I guess I have that in me that I never believe things until it happens. And I remember we were going to do a photo shoot in the basement for our first album, A Prelude to Our Demise, and in the basement of Cité Dormile, which no band has ever done. So many bands have done that.
Yeah.
And Randy was at jam that day, and we had like jammed with him, and he got up and screamed with us on Our Blackened Sun. And as we're leaving the jam room and we're going downstairs to do the photo shoot for our first album, you turn to me and go, Matt, do you believe me now that we're going to make it? And I feel like that's a moment that's really stuck with me that, like, first off, what is making it, right?
Yeah.
But the connectivity and the putting work in, because 3 Mile was a band that worked hard.
Constantly.
We jammed 3 to 4 times a week.
Religiously.
And if we missed the jam, it was a big thing. It was like you had to have like a real reason. Because we put the work in and we cared.
That's right. But that's, see, when I have people that come in, like I tell these stories to people and I talk, you know, about the, people ask me about the old days and I'll tell them. But then they don't believe and they think like, you, oh, aren't you lucky? It's like, no, not lucky.
No, we really put the work
yeah,
in.
Yeah, you busted ass like crazy. And like while everybody else was going out and having a good time and doing this, we were doing this.
It's true.
And
we
so
had subsequently
we had,
had a great time.
A great time. But that's what I'm saying is that we didn't go the conventional route.
No, we didn't.
And so by doing that, that work resulted in that. Had we not done that work, that stuff wouldn't have ever happened.
I would have never met any of the people that I met. I was very shy.
Fisherman hat.
The fisherman. I showed up to the first jam wearing a fisherman hat.
Yeah. And then I remember Alex came to me and he goes, are you serious? I'm like, just let the kids sing.
Let them sing. And I, you know, yeah. I was a good, clean singer at the time. I was learning how to scream. And it was really through experiences with you guys that I became a much more proficient extreme vocalist. I've listened to some of the earlier demos that we have, and I cringe at my harsh vocals. Takes time to get good, right? So you got to put the, but you got to practice the 4 days a week practicing.
Yeah, and just
it helped.
Just get better, man. It's like, who's a wizard right away? I mean, yeah, they do exist, but
they probably have horrible social skills, though.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they know a basement and their guitar, right? Which, you know, it's cool. I can appreciate it, but at the same time, it's like, nah, man. You put in the work. Put in the work. That's what it is. And honestly. And I said this on another podcast that I got interviewed on. Talent is talent. But you can teach, you can help somebody become better. How many drummers did we coach? Quite a few.
Quite a few. Yeah.
How many drummers did we have to, like, and I'm just using drummers as an example because everyone picks on drummers. But the reality is like, we coached a lot of them. And we you know, we got other people that came in and out of the band throughout time. We made them better. We pushed them to do. You make a person better. You can't make someone a better person.
No, you can't. No, that's the...
Yeah, so I for me, I've always put, like, 80% on, is the guy a cool hang?
Yeah. Can I live with this guy?
And 20% on his ability.
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, if he lacks a little bit here, we'll get him there. But is he a cool hang? Or a guy could come in and be a wizard, but I want to kill him.
Which we've had experiences
yeah,
with.
And I don't want to deal with that.
You exactly.
Know what I mean? His ability is not worth the trade-off.
True.
So
I think it's really important that, yeah.
Yeah.
For any musicians listening that are putting stuff together, just because they're the best in the city doesn't mean you want to hang out with them.
No. And when you're on the road, man, you don't have a home to go to, a job to go to, a girlfriend to go to,
there's no decompression.
Yeah, it's you and these dudes, maybe a girl in the band, who knows, but that's it. So you better get along. Yeah. Otherwise, things are going to end up bad, and you're going to end up in arguments in Toronto in a basement.
It's never happened to us.
Let's not talk about that.
It's funny that that member joining the band is directly linked to that Soulfly show, which we talked about earlier, but also not talking about that.
Yeah, let's not. Hard Rock Cafe. Anyway.
I'm very, yeah. Very happy that I have you in my life. I'm happy that I met you. Probably 23, 24 years ago at this point. 23 years ago, easily.
You still haven't wised up yet, huh?
We have. A little bit. We're drinking a light beer. We're
I
not
know.
Doing our age in vodka shots.
No. Yeah, you remember that one.
I do remember yeah. that. It was multiple years.
It was 27. And then there was more after.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was a night.
And I tell people that story, and they say, bullshit, you'd be dead. I'm like, really?
I did it. You did it. You're yeah. alive. I was there.
Yeah.
We were all counting. I don't know yeah. how I kept track, but...
Yeah.
It was lots of fun.
It was.
I appreciate having you in my life. I'm very stoked that we have this new relationship, aside from our friendship, as an artist, as a podcast with Audio Technica. I greatly, greatly appreciate you. I'm happy that we're hanging out right here at Melon. My beer is empty, so I want to get a new one. So we're going to keep hanging out, not with Vox and Hops heads listening.
No, just Hops.
People, go check out Audio Technica. They make good stuff.
Salute.
Hey, thank you all so much for listening right today. And you know that I love and appreciate that. Man, I had such a good time connecting with my very good friend, Mike Marino. We've been friends forever. So goddamn stoked that he helped Cryptopsy, helped Vox and Hops level up with Audio Technica products. I'm using the mic right now for the podcast that he gave me. I'm loving it. The AT2040. It's a hypercardioid dynamic microphone. It feels amazing. It sounds amazing. I'm so goddamn stoked. Massive, massive cheers to Mike Marino. I can't thank you enough, dude. I'm so stoked that we got to hang out here. I'm stoked that we hung out after I stopped recording. Always a pleasure to see you. Can't wait to see you again. Massive, massive cheers and lots of love, bud.
Now, if you enjoyed this Vox and Hops episode, you should sign up to the Vox and Hops Total Podcast mailing list. You can do that on my website, voxandhops.com. That's VOXANDHOPS.com. And when you do that, you shall receive one email a week that contains all of the details of everything that has happened recently in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. You'll get to see which episodes I dropped recently. You'll get to see which episodes I have coming up. You will also get to hear about any projects I have in the works before I announce them to the public. You will also get to hear about anything going on in the world of Cryptopsy, and there's a lot of stuff going on with Cryptopsy right now, so the mailing list will keep you up to date on that. You will also get to see which albums the Vox and Hops album review crew have reviewed recently, and you will get to see which albums Jerry Monk, Vox and Hops' metal architect, has added to the Brutal Awakenings playlist. If ever you're looking for new music to listen to, well, Jerry finds the best new releases and puts them all onto the Brutal Awakenings playlist for our listening pleasure. So check it out. It's available on both Apple Music and Spotify. There's always a lot of stuff going on in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, and I hate when you miss a single thing, so please do me a favor and sign up to the mailing list.
The Vox and Hops Metal Podcast is brought to you by Sound Telemedia and Evergreen Podcasts. I hope you have a killer rest of the week. I will be back next week with one episode on Tuesday, and it's a whole wrap-up episode all about Cryptopsy's Carnival of Death tour. But until then, remember to enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. Cheers, Vox and Hops heads.
This is Krista Makes, guitarist and vocalist for Less Than Jake, and host of Krista Makes a Podcast, a songwriting podcast where every week I'm joined by an amazing guest to break down the writing, recording, and release of one iconic song from their career. In our giant evergreen back catalog of episodes, we've had rock legends such as Dee Snider and Huey Lewis, punk rock favorites like Mark Hoppus, Fat Mike, and Brett Gurewitz, and up-and-coming artists of today, such as Liz Stokes of The Beths and Genesis Owusu. We've had guests from all genres and styles of music, and I guarantee that if you peruse our back catalog, you'll see several episodes that'll make you say, "Man, I gotta hear that." Whether you're a fan of music or a creator of music yourself, you'll take away a whole new appreciation for the songs you know and love. Krista Makes a Podcast is available for free on all the places you could possibly listen to podcasts, and new episodes come out every Monday.